Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Monday, May 20th, 2019. I'm Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who is still vacationing in the Caribbean. He and Ann headed to St. Martin last night and are settling in and are already posting some great photos and, again, some great history from the area. So you can find that on their Facebook page. And included in those photos is one by Ann that Bill calls his favorite of the trip. He titled it Stairway to Heaven, and it's kind of eerie and beautiful all at the same time. So go check out their vacation shots on Bill Buckmaster's Facebook page. The show comes to you live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, or you can catch the live stream or access all the archives at buckmastershow.com. We start the week talking to our political experts during the Monday political face-off. Lots going on. Today we welcome John Munger and Jeff Rogers. After the break at 12:30, we're going to be talking to Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District, and we're looking forward to that. Lots of questions for him. Please join us. If you have a question or comment, you can reach us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. The Monday Political Face-Off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They've been around since 1985, specialize in custom-framed mirrors, art, picture hangings, services, and systems. They have everything and a terrific reputation for getting it just right. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. And, of course, you can find them on Facebook. We are joined by commentators John Munger, Tucson attorney and former president of the Arizona Board of Regents and former GOP governor candidate, and Jeff Rogers. He is also a Tucson attorney and former head of the Pima County Democratic Party. John and Jeff, hope you guys had a great weekend. And what about this weather?
Oh, wow. It's kind of nice to have it nice and cool, but I'll be glad for the heat to come.
I think I can put off with it, given that we're going to have 4 or 5 months of it.
Yeah, so. Every day like this is a day to cherish. It's just beautiful outside.
Absolutely. This late in May to have these kind of days is wonderful. It's a great drive up from God's country down in there in Sahuarita and Green Valley. So we have got an awful lot going on, and we had traded some notes over the weekend, and I want to lay this one out for our listeners. So give me a minute here. It's going to be about tariffs. You guys both talked about tariffs in your last appearance a couple of weeks back on this show, but a lot has changed then. Last Monday, the U.S. Trade Representative's office listed about $300 billion worth of Chinese goods. We're talking children's clothing, mobile phones, toys, laptops, that the president is threatening with a 25% tariff. And we already have a 25% tariff on $250 billion of Chinese goods. Americans are going to start feeling the heat at any moment with that. Then the president backed off for 6 months on tariffs on car parts and some cars, but manufacturers are not happy. Here's part of a Toyota statement. It said, consumers will pay more and have fewer vehicle choices if import quotas are imposed. Now, on the other hand, on Friday, the U.S. said it would lift steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico to encourage lawmakers to ratify a new North American trade deal. Now, John, in an earlier appearance on Bill's show, you likened a tariff war to a military action. You have to be strong. You have to stand your ground. Given what's happened the past couple of weeks, you still have that stance?
Absolutely. You know, the answer to it is that we have an incredible advantage because we import so many more Chinese goods than they import from us. And principally, they don't import our goods because they have high tariffs on our goods already. We have kept our tariffs low, so we import a lot more Chinese goods. That means our manufacturers are at an incredible disadvantage. We can't sell as much to them because we have high tariffs in China. They sell a lot to us. So we have to level the playing field. The only way to do that is to tell them, look, until the playing field is fair and even, then we're going to increase our tariffs. And we can, because we import so much more than we export to them, they get hurt a lot more than we get hurt by the tariffs. Now, yes, the consumer is going to pay that cost. But the consumer, remember this, is only paying that cost to the extent that they buy Chinese goods. They can always buy American-made goods, and we will see more American-made goods, more people put to work in American manufacturing plants, the higher the price of the Chinese goods because of the tariffs. So we're going to have some short-term problems. Any war results in short-term sacrifices. But the fact of the matter is that if the prices remain, the tariffs remain high on Chinese goods, the Chinese are going to have to fold at some point and come to the bargaining table. And meanwhile, American manufacturers are going to increase their production and sell at a lower price than the Chinese goods can be sold, and we're going to create more American jobs and more American products.
Jeff, I'm going to guess that a lot of Americans are going to believe that getting tough is a good thing until it starts hitting them in the pocketbook.
Well, and it's you talk a good game, but nobody wins these trade wars. I mean, Trump is on record as saying, you know, they're beautiful and they're wonderful and we'll win. But the fact of the matter is nobody wins. It's who loses the most. John is right that China will lose more, but we're losing a lot already. We're in a position where our agricultural industry in the upper Midwest and the Midwest, where I'm from, is in shambles. I mean, you've got people that are going to go bankrupt this year that they aren't even able to get the loans for their seed money for next year. So we're in desperate circumstances with agriculture in this nation right now, and that's because of Trump. And the other problem that Trump has had with this tariff war is that he has alienated many of our allies. Now, fortunately, I applaud them for getting rid of the tariffs on Mexican goods and on Canadian goods, but we still have an aluminum and steel tariff on our European allies, and that's why our European allies are not coming to our aid and helping us with the trade war with China. And so, you know, you don't alienate your friends if you need them to help you battle your enemies. And certainly, China has been a bit of a problem for us in their unfair trading practices, and particularly in the areas where they make you turn over content or licensing and things to their companies, even stuff that's secret technology, they make you turn that over to participate in their market. And so we need to do something about it, but this is sort of, instead of using a scalpel, we're using a huge knife that's not going to do the job for us.
Well, there is no scalpel. The Democrats, have you noticed, don't come up with any ideas. The only way you're going to get the Chinese to cut their tariffs is to raise theirs in response, and it hurts them a lot more than it hurts us. And eventually, as I've said, we will create more products. As Chinese products become more expensive, our manufacturers will manufacture them at a lesser price. So it'll create more jobs. So, insofar as the Europeans are concerned, the reason that we've got tariffs on European goods is they have huge tariffs on our goods, much greater tariffs than we have on their goods. And so they're pretty much in the same position as the Chinese. We have to deal with them both. And that's the only solution. Now, the Democrats like to talk about, well, this is painful. Yeah, I'm sorry. We're in a trade war, and wars are painful. But the only way to solve the problem is to stand up to bullies. And the Chinese and the Europeans have been bullies. Nobody has done anything about it, Republican or Democrat. They don't have any other solutions. And we're just going to have to go through it and fight it through. But as we do, you're going to get higher price of foreign goods, and you're going to get more American manufacturers producing those goods at a cheaper price.
Well, so thus far, economists have estimated that this has cost American consumers $72 billion in what amounts to a tax. Unlike what Trump says, China's not paying this tariff. Americans are paying the tariff through higher prices because the tariffs are going to be paid by the people who import the products. And so once they import those products, they then have to pass that tariff tax along to consumers. And so pretty soon when you start seeing people paying 25% more for tennis shoes and for other items. You're going to start to see people lose their jobs, and it's going to start having a deleterious effect on our economy. It's something that will last a long time. And a lot of economists are very afraid and saying that this is already costing jobs to Americans, and we're going to see far less growth in the second quarter because of these tariffs.
Well, that may be, Jeff, but wars, and this is a war.
It's a war that Trump started.
No, it's a war the Chinese started 30 years ago. And it's a war the Europeans started 30 years ago. And they have been discriminating against our goods with high tariffs on our goods while we give them low tariffs. And the only way to stop it is to face the bully down. Now, you talk about people losing jobs. I submit to you that in the end, the Chinese goods become more expensive and European goods become more expensive, we are going to create more jobs here in the United States. A good example of that.
No, John, we're going to create a worldwide recession is what
we're going to
do.
No, we're not.
That's what's right around the corner if this continues for the next 6 months to a year.
I'm sorry,
and
but
I'd be happy to run against Trump during a worldwide recession caused by his actions.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't think we're going to see that, but look at the steel and aluminum industry in the United States has come back, and new jobs in the steel and aluminum industry have been created because
at a cost of $900,000 per job created. That's a fact.
Jeff, okay, you are listening to the Monday Political Face-Off with John Munger and Jeff Rogers, and already we're off to a great start. Before we take a break here, I want to take you on a virtual trip to Mona's Danish Bakery, Swana and Sunrise, one of Bill's favorite places. They also made our Mother's Day weekend special last week, and we enjoyed a lot of the other treats after I headed over there for a visit. No other way to say it. Everything that comes out of Mona's Danish Bakery is good, and
I can attest to that as well. I had breakfast there last weekend before riding my horse, and this weekend as well.
And you can get lunch there too. I'm making it a 2019 goal to taste just about everything over there. Our thanks to Steve and Sherry and the whole crew for their hard work to make our days a little brighter. Mona's Danish Bakery is a treat. Mona's on the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. Go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery, and of course, you can find them on Facebook. We will be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. It is the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com, and you can find them on Facebook. I'm Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuadita Sun, sitting in for Bill. You've joined us in the middle of the Monday Political Face-Off with Jeff Rogers and John Munger. We're just talking about tariffs. We might revisit that in a bit, but I want to move on to really a very fast-moving topic in the United States right now. Five states have passed restrictive abortion laws in the past few weeks, obviously in an attempt to push a reversal of Roe versus Wade. Many others are lining up to pass similar legislation. Jeff, will that work? And how will abortion reshape the 2020 election?
Well, I think it's going to reshape the election because it's going to be a hot button issue. And I think the Republicans are going to regret having these bills out there. But the I don't think that any of these are going to be upheld by a Supreme Court. I don't even think the Supreme Court's going to take any of these extreme cases. I think what will happen is they'll get struck down, as they rightfully should be, by federal district courts, and then probably those decisions will be upheld by the appellate courts. And then I think what will happen is they will probably decline to take the case from Alabama or Missouri or some of these extreme ones. Where I think the Republicans were succeeding is and could reach the Supreme Court is trimming around the edges of, you know, all of these restrictions that cause clinics to close and all these restrictions that make it more and more difficult for a woman to get an abortion. And I think those were probably their better shot, but they've abandoned that strategy in favor of this strategy of just, you know, the all-out war on women's reproductive rights. And I don't think that's going to work. I don't think there's five votes in that Supreme Court. It only takes four votes to get a case heard, to get a petition for cert granted. But I don't even know if there's four votes for that to get it before the court. But I'm optimistic that this court with Roberts, Roberts is not going to allow this to be completely dismantled. And I hope I'm not wrong on that, but I think that's where we're going.
John, do you think this is a strategy the Republicans are going to regret?
I think that it is bringing the issue to the fore, and it's done in response. Let's make it clear. It's done in response to the extreme position that's been taken by a number of Democratic leaders on late-term abortions. I mean, you have Governor Northam in Virginia literally talking about taking care of a born baby and making it comfortable until you kill it. So the Democrats have been taking very extreme positions regarding late-term abortions. I'm pro-life, as you know, and I favor exceptions for incest, rape, and life of the mother, as opposed to health of the mother, because that's very vague what the hell health means. We talking psychological health or physical health.
Sure.
But my view is that Republicans have been effective and can be effective on both routes. They, as Jeff has said, Republicans have taken the position of, in the past, of trimming around the edges and saying, okay, but you can't have very late-term abortions. And some of these bills that are being passed put limits on abortions after, say, 24 weeks or whatever, or heartbeat bills where there's a heartbeat, you can't have an abortion, etc. But I think that the Republicans can work both ends of it. I think that we can force people to face the issue that a fetus, particularly where its heart is beating, but maybe even before, is a human being. This isn't about life of the mother. The mother's made choices, except in the case of incest or rape. The mother's made choices. The mother's had contraceptives available, done all kinds of things. What about the life of the baby? And Democrats want to talk about the life of the mother, women's rights. What about baby's rights?
Jeff, who speaks for the baby?
Well, pre-viability, I don't think that the baby has anyone to speak for them because they're not a person. Once they're viable, then suddenly the Roe v. Wade trimester takes effect, and in that third trimester, it is a baby and it is potentially viable, and therefore it has rights, and those rights are recognized by the law, and the government can make regulation of that. But these late term abortions that John was speaking of, there are less than 6,000 of those performed yearly in the United States, and I bet you in almost every one of those cases, the mother's already decided on a name for the child and is looking forward to the birth of that child, and this is a tragic decision that takes place. And this is not something that's elective, where they're basically saying, "I've got too many kids. I don't want to have another child." These late term abortions are tragedies, and they're tragedies for the woman, for the fetus, and for society.
But if there was
no one's looking forward to that. No one justifies that except when the life or health of the mother. And I can tell you what, you know, there are plenty of doctors who will tell you, yeah, her health is threatened and her life is threatened, well, and therefore I'm recommending that she abort this fetus at this late stage to save her life and health from having possibly permanent health effects. So,
well,
you know,
this is not
something that people are proud of or happy to do. This is a tragedy.
Well, Jeff, the problem is that if there is an exception for life of the mother, then fine. If you have to abort the baby for the life of the mother, possibly, I'm not conceding the point, but possibly you could do that. But, and most people don't disagree with the concept of the exception for the life of the mother, even in late term, possibly. But the problem with the health of the mother is that has been interpreted by liberals to mean, well, if the mother feels bad, if the mother is afraid that she can't support the baby, I'm sorry. Nobody represents that child. And where the Democrats get this idea that viability is the big point. We know that a baby's heart begins to beat long before it's viable. And as far as I'm, and it has brain waves, who's protecting that child? This to me is exactly like slavery. The Civil War was fought over the fact that the people in the South did not have a right, individuals did not have a right to say, that person over there, because his skin is black, is not a human being. You don't have that right.
Okay, let's
Nobody move. Has that right. And it's exactly the same issue. You have no right to say that a baby whose brain waves are working and heart is beating is not a human being.
Okay, let's move on. We got a couple minutes left here, and I want to move on to the state budget. Right now, House and Senate leaders, actually today in the state legislature, are trying to hammer out a deal for the state budget. I sent you both a story from U.S. News and World Report. I don't want to get into budget specifics, but I do want to talk about one line in that story. And as we know, the Republicans control the House and the Senate at the legislature. And of course, we have a Republican governor. And that line is, minority Democrats weren't involved in the negotiations. And John, earlier I told you Randy Graff was in my office this morning. He's a former state legislator, had run for Congress, Republican, and we were talking about the, you know, making of the sausage of the state budget and who's included and who's not. But why would the Republicans not include the Democrats when they're trying to hammer out a budget that is for the entire state?
Do you think, for the same reason Nancy Pelosi, who controls the House of Representatives in Congress, doesn't consult the Republicans because she can, and because she doesn't want to argue with the Republicans about the budget. And so that is the nature of the political system. Nancy Pelosi doesn't have to consult with the Republicans any more than the Republicans have to consult with the Democrats here. And as I think you pointed out to me, Randy Graff pointed out that there's only a limited amount of time. You get too many people involved in it, and it becomes a never-ending process. That's why a majority was elected, for the majority to make a decision. That's what happens in Congress. That's a political system. So if you're going to focus on the Republicans in our legislature, why don't you try focusing on the Democrats in the House of Representatives in Congress. They do exactly the same thing. It's the nature of the political system.
Jeff, this has to be frustrating for the Democrats in Arizona because they've never controlled things, or it's been a real long time.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Democrats' budget that they released is much closer to Governor Ducey's budget. They have a lot more in common with each other than Ducey has with the budget offered by the House and Senate Republicans. So I'm not optimistic that they're going to solve that this week. You've also got two state senators who say they won't vote on the budget, period, and they need both of those votes because you have to have 31 votes in the House and you have to have 16 in the Senate. And so that every Republican has to be on board virtually, especially in the House, and they've got two Republicans who basically say they won't do it unless the statute of limitations on civil suits alleging sexual assault of children is extended to the age of 30. Right now, it's 2 years after you reach the age of majority, which is 18, so that's 2 years is 20, and they want it extended up to 30, which I think is a very bad idea, although most of the Democrats will probably vote for it. But as a lawyer, I'm not in favor of those kinds of extensions. But I'm not optimistic they're going to have a budget this week. I spent yesterday afternoon with four state legislators talking about where we're at, and they weren't optimistic either.
Well, we have till July 1, I suppose, to actually put that thing together. And I know the state has gone that late at least one time. Randy and I were talking about earlier today.
I think what's going to happen is they're going to do sign, he die, and come back for a special session.
Could be.
And they may well do that.
Sure.
But you're asking a different question. You're asking why the Republicans don't consult with the Democrats. And the answer is the same reason that the Democrats don't consult with Republicans when Nancy Pelosi's Speaker of the House.
Yep. Okay, and right now the Republicans have more people in there, and they're controlling it. That is going to wrap it up for the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. My thanks to Jeff and John. We hope you guys have a great week. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you.
When we return, we're going to be joined by Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District down where I live. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill, who is enjoying a wonderful vacation with his wife. And check out all of their photos on their Facebook page. It's awesome. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, like exploring the historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do, great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.com. greenvalleynews.org. I also want to mention Green Things, because everybody's thinking about gardening this time of year, and what better place to be on a day like today than outside. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Now, Green Things, on their 13-acre site, is home to Socalo Village and all those fine Mexican and Latin American imports. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. We now welcome Dr. Manny Valenzuela. Dr. Valenzuela is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. Thanks for coming up.
It's always my pleasure. Thanks for having me back again, Dan.
It's graduation week. We're sending kids out into the world. You have two high schools down there, Sahuarita High School and Walden Grove. Roughly how many kids are we sending out?
Well, first I'd say, you know, this is about as close as we have to a final product. It's kind of the culminating event. You know,
deal.
It's a process. And so we really try and make it extra special because it is the culmination and a collaborative effort on the entire community. But it is very special. It's a special week. And we've got 211 students from Sahuarita High School and I believe 253 from Walden Grove High, for a total, I believe, of 464. And we're very excited about that.
So here's the big question. Are they ready?
You know, I believe they are, Dan. I think when you look at how rapidly the world is changing technologically, economically, educationally, and just fast, I think what you ask yourself is, have you prepared students not only for a deep foundational knowledge of content and skills, but the ability to think critically, to work with others, to collaborate, and to find creative new solutions? And we've been working pretty intentionally on those efforts, so I do feel that our students are prepared and ready to take the next chapter of their life going forward.
And they're heading out all over the place. Some going to the military or college or the workforce or just everywhere.
Absolutely.
It's great to see where they end up. Last month, you were trying to put together your budget, and at one point, there was a debate over whether to put money toward rising insurance costs, which is a huge issue for districts across the state and everybody, frankly, or giving teachers raises. And that is a difficult spot to be in. What did you decide and why?
We made an intentional decision to take every available financial resource and to put it into honoring the governor's stated goal of giving teachers a 5% after having given them a 10% raise last year. And the reason we did that is we believe that even in this high-tech world and in this complex world, our profession is inherently a human endeavor. And if we can invest and recruit and keep the best people and show that as a tangible sign of our desire to bring people into the organization, to invest in them and to keep them, then we believe that the prospects for continued growth and the attainment of our mission of student success is going to be greatest.
And we should make it clear that just because the district offers health insurance for its employees does not mean that everybody avails himself of that.
That's exactly right. Actually, in our case, about half of the people actually avail themselves of the insurance that we offer. As you said, I mean, this is a national issue involving healthcare and healthcare reform, and it's expensive. We've mitigated it for a long time. There were multiple years where we offset increases, but, you know, and we've been really good the last couple of years, though. We did have a double-digit increase. Last year, we had a 10% increase, and the district absorbed it to hold those costs harmless. This year, we got a 15%, and we grappled with it extensively. But frankly, if we desire to reach this goal of a 5% raise on this year's contract, not 2 years ago, like sometimes you hear referenced based on the baseline year for the governor.
Right.
But if we were going to achieve that, we couldn't, I think it was $330,000, we couldn't put that on the table and still achieve that goal.
You and I have talked before about money going into the classroom, and that's, of course, what all parents and teachers want. But we've talked about, let's just say over the last 30 years, what expenses you have that maybe we didn't have in years past. One of them is health insurance, and that's a growing issue. And like you say, it's just going up huge increases every year. And the other is campus security, which, of course, is a huge concern, too. These are two areas where the money is being, frankly, diverted from the classroom for good reason. But these are things that we never had to think about, say, when you and I were going to school.
No, absolutely. And, you know, these things are very complex, and sometimes it's hard to simplify complicated things into real simple talking points.
But you know, in a real basic sense, you're right. Fundamentally, we're here to teach and help students learn. But the complexity of the world is such that the costs have accelerated. We're in a highly technological world where we need to deliver the tools of 21st century learning so that students can use it to create the level of learning and outcomes. But at the same time, the investment on the capital side for that has not corresponded with the growth. Similarly, safety. We've been very resourceful. We have two school resource officer grants, and we work closely with our local law enforcement to try and support positive environments. But we also know that safety is a multifaceted effort. It includes building a strong culture, engaging parents, communication, working with multiple stakeholders, and we try and leverage that. But like you said, when you think back, and I think you and I are about the same age, when you think back to there when we were in school, these weren't as much in the forefront, but we can't negate them because they are critical.
I want to read a couple of lines from a story we published in April and get your feedback, even though it's quoting you. Even though Governor Doug Ducey promised teachers last year they would receive a 20% raise by 2020, the state is not providing adequate funding to make that happen, Valenzuela said. This year, the district is only expecting to get enough money from the state to fund 3% raises, he said. So the question is the state giving you enough to fund the governor's promise?
The simple answer to that question is no. The way we've been able to do it, we received about 60% of what we needed for a 5% raise. We got about $600,000 is what we're receiving, and it costs about $1 million for us to give a 5% raise for our teachers specifically. And so what we've done is we've taken the other increase that's been required after the settlement of the inflation lawsuit, and we've helped to achieve that outcome and also provided as much compensation increase as we could for our valuable members of the support staff team, our administrative team, and other instructional support personnel.
And that's a good point, because when the governor made this promise for teacher raises, I don't know that he was including things like attendance clerks or bus drivers or cafeteria workers, these people who are absolutely integral to making the district function. They're not on a stage, in a sense, like teachers are, but they're very important to the mission. So have you had to carve out extra money for raises for them, or could you? It's going to be a very awkward position to give teachers raises and not those people.
No, we stretched and pulled and pushed and looked in every nook and cranny, and we were able to give all of those employee groups a 4% raise, not a 5, but we honored the 5% on this year's contract going forward for teachers and a 4% for everybody else. And I appreciate your mentioning that it was a sacrifice, and it was with intentionality, and it was a stretch. We took a small fraction, a minority fraction, meaning I think about 10 to 20% of our available capital, and we intentionally moved it over temporarily. We used some reserves that we had in order to fill the bucket to the top level that we needed to achieve that. And you know, we did have some healthy and spirited conversations about that as a team and among our governing board. And I think the way that I see it is, the mindset that we have is one of growth. Our communities invested significantly in the development of specific programs, specific outcomes. And I think directionally going forward, we are in a growth mindset. We will continue to grow. We are taking a calculated, thoughtful risk on that. And we believe that growth is the way to show investment in the community, investment in our people, and tangible outcomes on the achievements of our students. I think sometimes, and it's not just in education, I think when you look at corporate cultures across America, when you get in trouble, there's the first reaction is you can look better for the short term if you just cut, and then you can show your bottom line looks more favorable. I think but when you do that, that doesn't come without a tangible price. And I think we felt that we're on solid enough ground where obviously if we had to cut, we'd cut. If the override would have failed and we couldn't pay people, we would have had to cut. But at this point, we're investing in the fact that we're going to continue to grow, we're going to invest in people, and we're going to develop quality programs.
Okay, we are coming up on 12:46. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show with our guest, Dr. Manny Valenzuela of the Sahuarita Unified School District.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Every day, your safety and freedom is protected by the service and sacrifice of our first responders and military. Please join us in this community effort to build the Southern Arizona Veterans and First Responders Living Memorial, a place to celebrate those who have paid the price for our freedom and those who continue to defend it today. Help create a space where these memories, past, present, and future, will live forever. Learn more and donate by visiting vfrm.org.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. Let's talk for a second about the Danish Kringle, because that's one of Bill's favorite things in the world. They come from Mona's Danish Bakery at Swan and Sunrise, and they are incredible. More so, Mona's does an awesome job with all the European baked goods, breads, pastries, cakes, brownies. They are open for lunch right now, and they offer a hot breakfast, as Jeff Rogers had mentioned earlier. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise, absolutely worth the trip. We are talking to Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He heads the school district in my town, Sahuarita. And we have got a caller. Matt, you there?
Yeah, Dr. Valenzuela. The number one, we're number one at the bottom in the entire country is on counselors. I think it is an epidemic almost here, both at TUSD and the rest of the state of Arizona. How's Sahuarita dealing with that, and where are you with counselors in relationship to the rest of the districts, AMPI and so forth? Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for your question. It's a good question. I share your insights and your thoughts about the fact that the school counselor is an integral part of the educational team. I think when you look at a lot of the issues that we talk about now, besides traditional roles of counselor, but things like helping with case management, the importance of mental health, and the total well-being of students is critical. Excuse me. In Sahuarita, thanks to our local community, we're doing not ideal, but we're doing better than those very concerning national statistics that you're citing. Through a local override that we've had in place in the Sahuarita School District for several years, we're able to have at least one full-time master's level certified counselor in every one of our schools. And that's a tremendous asset because they deliver competency-based classroom guidance lessons. They deliver targeted intervention groups for students based on their individual needs. And they help with crisis intervention and college and career counseling. So we have our ratio at the high school level is approximately 1 to 500. It's better than the 1 to 900, but it'd be better if we could go down to the national recommendation, which is, I think, The national school counselor says like 1 to 300 or 1 to 250. So we feel blessed. We feel better off than some, but we're always trying to do better.
We were talking earlier about teachers and raises, and is it too early to determine whether the increase in pay for teachers in Arizona is drawing more people into the profession or is having them stay in state after they graduate?
Dan, you know, we've had this conversation multiple times and some things remain constant. I think I've used the line, money is not everything, but it is something. And I can tell you that we track this because we believe this wholeheartedly. And over the last 6 years, we've offered a cumulative compensation increase to our teachers of 28 or 29%, you know, 4% 1 year, two, then three. So even in the recession, we've been pretty blessed in terms of being able to offer that. This year we're honoring 5% from this year's contract. Last year we honored the 10%. We believe that it correlates to the fact that we have a turnover rate of only about 8 to 9%. And in addition to that, though, I would say that it's more than that. I think it's the intentionality and the comprehensive nature of our approach through professional development, coaching, mentoring, also creating an environment through our intramural program, our staff competitions, movie nights, staff night at the ball game. It's really about creating an environment where we want people to feel valued tangibly through their raise, but also that this is a place where they want to be and they want to stay.
My son, we're very proud parents, just graduated with his master's degree from the University of Arizona, and he is heading off to Flowing Well School District to be a high school English teacher. We're very proud of him. He was the first Walden Grove High School graduate to come back and be part of the student teaching fellows. You have a program with the University of Arizona that brings teachers in, and the idea is to kind of keep them where you grew them.
You know, we may not ever have all the money we need, but I think that there's great opportunity by identifying issues that you face and surrounding yourself and intentionally reaching out to others that have those common interests, common resources, common expertise. In this case, we reached out to the University of Arizona, with whom we've continued to nurture and develop a strong partnership. They have a comprehensive training site called ICATS at our site. And we asked them about the possibility of identifying people with strong roots to our community. And this could be any community, but of course we focus on ours. And we look for people, whether they be parents, they be alum, people that are residents in the area, that have a stronger connection to the community and therefore would be foreseeably likely to stay. We work with the university to kind of customize the standard program offerings so that they are more tailored to a seamless transition to our district in particular, but not exclusively. And we also share a nominal commitment of financial incentives to students who we select and who come through the university program, do field studies in our schools, and hopefully ultimately are hired in our schools. And even if they're not, we've helped advance the profession. And if they are, then we've helped to recruit one at a time professional educators who are rooted in our community.
My family and I moved to Sahuarita 10 years ago. There were 6 schools at the time. Now there are 9. You just opened up Wrightson Ridge, which is a K-8 school, in January. What's next?
You know, we always got to be looking at what's next because, in the words of Lou Holtz, if you're not going forward, you're dying. And we don't want to do that. We want to keep moving forward. I think a few things are next. One is we got to continue to intentionally and intelligently manage the growth. If you look around, you drive down I-19, you see large swaths of development that are going on, and we'd like to believe that we want to grow with the greater community in a way that elevates education, quality of life, and workforce. So that's got to be a continuous effort to manage that growth. You know, our community has been beyond generous and sacrificed to help us build schools in a timely, quality manner at a time when, frankly, sometimes in the state's funding system hasn't been able to fund that in one way or to the extent it's necessary. So we've got to be able to manage that. We also have to continue to focus on our foot on the pedal in preparing students for 21st century growth. We talked a little bit nostalgically about where school was when we were at. You know, we have a time where our students are going into a world that's changing rapidly, where jobs today that they're going into, the graduates weren't even around 10 years ago. You know, 2/3 of the jobs require some kind of post-secondary education. So we have to continue to not just do stuff, but do things in a higher quality, better way. We've done that through innovative program adoptions. We're teaching mathematics, I think, in a deeper, more 21st century centric way. We're establishing more field internships, elevating the level of rigor, working with the business sector so that we're providing what they need. And I think education's a community affair, and we've got to keep working hard to make our community thrive and prosper in all of these ways. And it's exciting work to do, very challenging, but very rewarding. You know, when I see these kids go across the stage and I see the places they're going and the amount of scholarship that they've earned this year, which this year is, I think, over $8.1 million.
Wow.
It's very, very rewarding.
Well, what's next as far as building a school? Do you see a third high school in the offing? Would that be next?
You know, I think for one, you know, this is the first year and I'm grateful because I do appreciate our community and their sacrifice. First year in a while that we won't have anything on the ballot this fall, and so we're grateful for that. We have space right now, but we foreseeably will need to accommodate the growth. I foresee that the high school level will likely be the next area of need, although for the next couple of years, barring a exponential growth, we should be okay. The question is how to do it. You know, we're working with the state. I know there's promise that they're going to invest more in new school construction. I know there was chatter up at the state legislature. Same thing with building renewal, which is renovating schools that are 60 years old. So we also know they're real expensive. I think our neighbors to the east over there in Vail, they're looking at building a comprehensive high school that, as originally conceptualized, is $60 or $70 million. And the feasibility of that might require some creativity, maybe the possibility of another smaller school or an addition to an existing campus. But stay tuned. We'll continue the conversation with our community.
And what we are going to get near a campus is you sold a piece of land last year to the county, and the new county library in Sahuarita, roughly 20,000 square feet, is going to be perched right between a couple of schools. You see that as a benefit?
So again, an example of what happens when you get entities that may not always have all of the same interests or even points of view, but when you can agree that there's a win-win for all sides, we're going to get this beautiful community resources right smack dab in the middle of our educational center within a one-mile radius of 6 or 7 schools.
Right.
And so we think it's a resource, it's a community space for the residents that live there, and it's also going to be an educational tool for us.
Very good. Our thanks to Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. Always good to spend time with you, Manny.
Thanks for having me. I'd be glad to come back anytime.
Great. I'm going to be back in this seat on Friday as we talk to Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. Bill has several of us sitting in for him during his vacation. Don't forget to check his photos on his Facebook page. And of course, all his shows are archived at buckmastershow.com. On behalf of the team here at The Buckmaster Show, you make it a great Monday.